Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I am your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I'm really excited about our guest today. We have Wes Moss, and he is the host of Money Matters, one of the nation's longest-running live call-in investment and personal finance radio show. Wes is the chief investment strategist at Capital Investment Advisors, currently manages more than $2 billion in clients' assets. In 2017, Barron's named Wes Moss one of America's top 100 independent wealth advisors. In the same year, Wes was featured in Barron's, where he offers a look back over his career in addition to offering an overview of the income-oriented investment strategy that he pursues for his clients. Wes has written several books, including Starting from Scratch and Make More, Worry Less. His latest book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, The Five Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees, has been a consistent bestseller in the retirement planning category. It's my pleasure to welcome Wes to our show today.
Hi, Belinda.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great. Well, I think that this is a very important topic and one that is always either on top of people's minds or somewhere buried, but it is certainly on people's minds. So why don't we just jump right in and fill in some of the gaps from your bio and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so the bio is just, you know, basically about media, and I've been doing financial media for a long time, for well over a decade, which is on terrestrial radio, obviously, FM and AM, and that's supposed to be a dying medium, but it still hasn't died yet, and that's been great. But what's been growing, of course, as you know from Work From Your Happy Place, is podcasting, and so that's been a new medium that we've participated in almost reluctantly, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. But today, certainly a huge part of our audience is via podcast, along with the traditional radio. And then, I was with a big firm. I think what's not in my bio is that I always wanted to go out independent and have my own business. And I worked for a big investment firm for kind of the first decade of my career. And in the last decade has been independent, and that making that transition about a decade ago was a scary but really pivotal time in life and for my career. So, but I also love, you know, the topic and the theme of your show is kind of dear to my heart. My book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, the subtitle of it is the five secrets of the happiest retirees. So when you say, you know, work from your happy place, I know that can be a relatively broad theme, but I'm just such a big believer in that as a theme, and trying to help people do a better job at doing that or accomplishing that. So, you know, I'm excited to talk about it.
Great. So then tell us a little bit more about your business and how it's shaped your lifestyle today.
Well, I was on another thing that's not in the bio. I was on The Apprentice with Donald Trump back in the day. If you're not familiar with Donald Trump, he's our current president. And back in 2004, I never thought that I would, you know, we had no idea that he would be running for president one day. But if your audience maybe remembers that show back in 2004, so we're talking 15 years ago, it was kind of a little bit of a reality TV phenomenon. I don't know if I'd ever do it today, but I was much younger in my 20s, and I did it. And that helped shape my understanding of kind of the media world. And I'd say if there's anything that Mark Burnett and his crew and Trump and his crew taught me, it was really about the media. So that's one thing that's kind of helped shape how I do business today. But the other part of that is that we run an investment firm for retirees, and I've been able to kind of really do both. Is I've been able to do financial media live. When I say live call-in show, we still answer many, many questions just out of the blue, live radio every single week. And it's kind of it's a challenge, but it's what I do for a living anyway. So I should be able to do it on the radio as well. And that you put the two together, financial advice. I've been a certified financial planner for a very long time. Our firm, we help over 2,000 families you know, over $2 billion. And we've dealt with a lot of situations. So it's fun to be able to do that live on the radio, too, on every Sunday on WSB Radio in Atlanta. And it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that is great. Now, what year did The Apprentice come out? What year was that? Like, what was the first season? What year?
It was 2004. It was actually, I remember watching the Super Bowl in 04, so January or February of 04, and seeing a preview for the show. And then it came out, I think, that week or maybe right after the Super Bowl. And
right.
So it was the beginning of 04. And then I was on the second season, which is in the fall of 04. So I was there right in the very beginning.
I think I remember you on that.
Maybe.
Because that's when I was really watching it. We used to have debriefings here in the office about it and say, okay, what would you have done? What was your highlights? Like in the beginning, the show was so good, I thought. And then it just kind of went downhill from there as far as being interesting. It became too much about product placement and not as much about the actual challenges that people were doing and sort of their own ideas and how they were making that happen and not the drama. As years went on, it just became a lot about the drama versus about the actual task. And I loved it in the very beginning. Those first two seasons were great.
Well, exactly. I mean, that was what was so unique about it is there was a real window into the strategy. And I still look back on that and think, gosh, I wish I was smarter when I was on that show, or I wish I'd had more experience. I wish I thought of things then as I do now. I mean, I was 27 at the time. I'm almost 43 today. So I've had a lot of business experience since the show. And I wish, I look back on it and there's still clips of, The Apprentice on YouTube. And I think, A, I looked so ridiculously young, and B, I was so amazingly stupid to not think of all these different things while we were doing these tasks. And so I survived long enough. Luckily, I think I was there 11 TV episodes. So it was long enough to kind of win the thing. But it was a wonderful experience. But you're right. It was about the strategy to tackle a business problem in a short period of time. And you were measured and you had to compete. And that was pretty cool back in the day.
It was so cool. And I loved it because we had great dialogue around it. Like we could continue those conversations and do teaching strategies around it. Like, okay, what would you have done? And did great collaboration. Like we had groups that we actually did collaboration with after each show, and it was so much fun. And then it wasn't, because it was just not, it was the challenges were, it just became, what it became. But anyway.
Well, and your listeners, the other thing is that it's so that that kind of, here's the problem, come up with a great solution quickly and execute it over the course of, let's say, a couple of days. In the real business world, it's usually days and weeks. But there's so many times in the last 15 years where I've said, wow, this feels like an apprentice task. What would win this thing in the real world? And we all do it. Like everybody listening within their scope of whether it's their own business or they're working with a group or solo, whatever it is, they're going to run into task after task where you kind of have to think that same way. It's like, okay, here's the problem. What's the best solution? What would win this? What would make it a success? So we all go through that all the time.
Absolutely. Yep. It's a great point. So what do you think two of your greatest skill sets are that have helped you in owning your own business and being the success that you are?
I don't know. I would say that naturally, as an entrepreneur, it's probably curiosity. If you really get down to one, one that's nebulous, which is curiosity, which can mean a lot, and two is just execution, right? Kind of like hard work. Grew up on a farm. My dad's a veterinarian, so we had cows he worked on cows, but I had horses, and a lot of summers of basically mucking out stalls and landscaping. And I'd say maybe that's the execution side of the world. But then the curiosity part, I think, is what sets the modern economy. How do you succeed in the modern economy? I think that it's about curiosity, exploring and pushing the envelope in new channels, and creativity. So when I say curiosity, I mean kind of a lot of different, it helps explore new avenues. I'm interested in doing new things, making the business better, even though it might be going well. There's no time to ever rest on our laurels, no matter how good we're doing. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like work when you're just really excited or curious about kind of how do we do better? And that's, I think, what is sets a lot of business owners apart. If they can be curious about how to always be a little bit better, that's maybe that's part of what's helped.
Well, that's great. So to date, what's one of your most outstanding accomplishments or something that's super meaningful for you?
Well, maybe surviving The Apprentice and not getting fired from my job while I was doing it. Because believe me, there are a lot of folks that it did not go well for, and it really impacted their professional life. Were we talking about mistakes or things that we overcame?
Outstanding accomplishments. I
would say, yeah, just breaking into getting my foot in the door in the financial media in my 20s. Was one of the most interesting pivotal points in my career. And being able to do something in my 20s that really set me up for my 30s was to be able to do that. And that took a lot of work. It wasn't like, oh, somebody was like, hey, you want to do a radio show? It was, how do you get your foot in the door? I had written a book about entrepreneurship that helped me. So The Apprentice helped me be able to maybe open my eyes to the power of doing something like a book. The book helped me open my doors to get into radio stations, and then cutting my teeth at doing kind of just small radio stations, getting better at this trade that I thought at some point would pay off. And then an opportunity came up for the largest radio station in Atlanta and really the Southeast, one of the biggest in the country, and one of the very oldest. Our station, WSB Radio, was started in 1925.
Wow.
And it was like the first 100-watt, big radio station in the South. And it, it still lives on to this day. It still is the highest rated radio station, biggest cume in the entire Southeast. So to be able to cut my chops on some smaller stations in my 20s and then get a job, the primary money host and reporter for that station, that really has been an interesting event. It took a lot of kind of just work to eventually get there. And then that led me to writing You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, which I had some, my first book was pretty okay. It sold okay. My second book was a total failure. Didn't sell anything. And I vowed never to do a book again. And then I had an idea 5, 6, 7 years later, which was, hey, this, what makes happy retirees tick? What are the habits of the happy retirees? Who are the ones that retire early? Let's collect some data on that. And I did a big survey, and the data itself wrote that book. And that's been the biggest turning point, I think, in my career, is being able to have a book that has really continues to sell, and I think we're well over 100,000 copies of that book to every state in the nation and actually out of the country as well. And for that's still not 100,000 books is there's still obviously it's not a New York Times bestseller with millions, but it's a financial book, and it's hard for financial books to sell more than like 10 copies. So yeah, that's been a wonderful development.
Well, that is great. So then kind of opposite of that, what is one of the greatest challenges that you've had and or obstacles and how you work through it?
There are a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot of them. The financial crisis through 08, 09, 07, 08, 09, that was tough. No matter, I think for everybody in the financial industry, that was difficult. I did, one thing I did I thought was going to be great. It turned out to be like my first public PR semi-nightmare. Was back in 09, I did a commercial for, they were looking for a young certified financial planner. And I guess maybe because I'd been on The Apprentice and had a little bit of a media experience, I got chosen as a spokesperson for the Microsoft, which sounds legitimate, Zune, which was their MP3 player that was meant to compete with the iPod.
Okay.
At the time. So it was Microsoft versus Apple in 09. And I did this big campaign for the Microsoft Zune. And it was kind of like an anti-Apple campaign. Like, hey, you should use the Zune. It's better. It's a cheaper. It's a subscription-based model. Why waste thousands of dollars on your through iTunes to fill up your iPad when you could just pay $15 a month or $10 a month for this subscription-based service and be easier on your wallet. Well, Zune was a disaster. The Microsoft technology that they rolled out, like their version of iTunes, like didn't work for a couple months. So it just didn't get adopted. And it actually, they discontinued the product. And during that first month, I had so much lashback against people that hated Microsoft, loved Apple. You know, somebody set up like a dummy web page about me that was like, this guy's the biggest a-hole on the planet. He's an idiot.
Oh, my gosh.
Gizmodo wrote an article about, you know, this idiot that likes this terrible product. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, you can really media is like playing with fire. And that was my first baptism by fire, is doing that commercial thinking, oh, this is going to be just all upside. And it was a lot of downside. And then the product's gone. So the whole thing, none of it worked out. So anyway, it really taught me just how unbelievably powerful the media is on the downside as well.
Right.
And that, I think, is a pretty valuable lesson in a very media centric world where our digital fingerprint is there forever.
Wow. And so then how did you work through that? How did you come out of that?
I think what I learned is that eventually, as long as you're doing something from a good place, it can be a big speed bump, even if it doesn't work out, but it doesn't necessarily sink you, right? There's nothing wrong with the Zune. You know, it wasn't my fault that Microsoft built a mediocre product. I didn't think that would have happened, but you also, if you can, you learn that even though in a period of a week or a day or a month, you might think that, oh my goodness, my whole media career is done because I have this one mistake, basically, that the journey is long and you've got years and years and years ahead of you to do better content, or content that is good, that people aren't making fun of. And eventually it's the new relevant content that you're creating that rises to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Absolutely.
Good lesson in that.
Yeah, absolutely. On all fronts. So that's great. So this is our key question of the show, and it always evokes many different responses. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
I think I earlier talked about curiosity and liking to do new things. I think my favorite part of work from happy place is a diversity of how my week is broken up.
Okay.
And the flexibility to be able to do, have a very ultra flexible schedule, even though I work a lot, doesn't feel like work when I get to break that up into three very distinct lines of business, if you will. So I have, let's say, a third of my time is spent with clients and new potential clients and the task of how I spend my time as an investor and a researcher. Another third is spent doing media, which is still an everyday proposition. Also require that the reason this is okay is that it overlaps with my real life job, which is research, understanding what's happening in the world, macroeconomics, microeconomics, global economics. What are we doing from an investment standpoint, which ultimately end up using for radio content. So it's kind of, I always want to be able to kill two birds, maybe three birds with one stone while I'm working. And then the third part of it is really running the business of what we have here as an investment firm. We have a tax firm. We have a law group that's all kind of in one big headquarters, if you will. We've got about, if you count everybody from the legal department, the estate planning and CPA and tax, and then our investment research and financial advisors, you know, we have a business of over 50 people. And as we grow, and now we have offices outside of Atlanta as well, Tampa, we're setting up a Denver office right now, looking at other locations. So that part of really going from a tiny little business of, you know, 5 to 8 people to now a full scale, more of a medium business, there is a lot in that making that leap. And so there's a lot of time making sure that strategically we're doing the right things, making sure we have processes in place so that we're replicating what we're doing in our headquarters, in our other offices. So that takes up, I would say that that's a lot of fun in a very separate job, if you will. And to be able to do those three things, which is my core job with clients and investing, to the media job, to the running of a business job, I love that I get to do all three of those different things. Sure, they all overlap, but it's kind of wearing three separate hats, and it keeps things really, really interesting.
Great. What advice would you give to those wanting to be an entrepreneur? Like, I want to have my own business. I want to kind of follow down this path.
The delayed reward.
Okay.
You know, it's a delayed reward. It's much more effort than a job because it is a life. But it's rewarding, right? I mean, there's a huge difference. I mean, not everybody, but it's a certain type of person that wants to be an entrepreneur that is the kind of person that would love to work 60 hours a week for themselves. They'd rather 60 hours a week working for themselves than 30 hours a week at a cush job. Right.
Yep.
You present that opportunity, same amount of money. Even you could say for 30 hours a week, you get $100,000, or 60 hours a week working your tail off for 90, right? Or 80. This one's a cush job. This one's your own company. Which one do you want? You know, I don't know what the breakdown would be. Is it half and half? Is it 80-20? I don't know what it is, but if you're an entrepreneur, you choose option B, right? You choose much more work, probably lower pay for a long time. But 100% those hours that you're toiling away, they're really all towards the equity you're building in that business. Sometimes it won't manifest for 20 years, for goodness sakes. I've seen clients that have been entrepreneurs for many, many years that didn't really kick in for like 15 years.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. I've seen people 20 years before they're like, yeah, I was just doing this and doing this and doing this. And then along came this really good deal and boom, I made like $1 million and I did, you know, in 1 year, $5 billion, right? It's the ultra marathon. You know, we say, oh, it's not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's really like one of those things you watch on TV. That's like the ultra marathon, like the 70-mile runs through the desert. It's right. More like that. It's more like the Iditarod. That's not the Boston Marathon. Boston Marathon is like, it doesn't do it justice. It's the Iditarod. Which is like 100 miles in the snow. That's more like it. But if you can stay in the game of your own business that long, you know, I would say if you can do it for that long, 9 times out of 10, there is a tremendous financial reward too.
Absolutely.
Either at the end or along the way.
Right. So before we kind of close and talk about what some exciting things you're working on and how people can find you, I'm going to advise people to grab your book if that's something that they're really interested in, which I would imagine that everybody wants to retire happy.
Retire sooner. Yeah, retire sooner than you think is the name. And yeah, 5 Secrets of the Happiest Retirees.
So why don't you just give us a couple of those? Like, so is there a couple of tips that you would like to share for people to kind of get started on this journey? I would love for you to be able just to kind of give a couple of pointers and your field of expertise. And then that might encourage people to say, I got to grab this book.
Yeah, you know, I think that the first part of this, what surprised me about my survey was that I kind of in my mind was like, oh, I think here's what the happy retiree does. Because, you know, if you've been in the business as long as I have been, and we work with over 2,000 families, you can imagine I kind of have seen it all, right? I've seen people with a ton of money that aren't that happy. And I see people with just a little bit of money that are super happy, right?
Yep.
And then everything in between. But what struck me over these many years is like, okay, well, there's a certain amount of level that you kind of need to get to, that as long as you have these certain traits, that's why I want to end up when I'm 55, right? When I can stop working and really enjoy the money that I have. So, I ultimately did a survey that asked 30 different lifestyle questions and how do you spend your money and then financial questions like how much money do you have and how much money did you make during your peak earning years and what's the value of your house and is it paid off or not paid off and how many years left to pay it off and how many kids do you have? All these things. Where do you shop? Where do you eat out? And, you know, what I learned here is that even though Wall Street, and I think this is the first glaring problem or attitude I try to solve with this research in this book is that there's still a really steady, heavy drumbeat, Belinda, that is you need millions of dollars to retire. You need 2.6 million to be able to, the average American would need 2.6 million to continue their current lifestyle. You need $5 million to have your current lifestyle. Susie Orman, I think, recently said you can't retire until you have at least $10 million or like $15 million if you're going to retire young. And study after study says you need more. Well, it's all coming from big financial companies that are publicly traded that need to grow no matter what, right? So where are we getting these studies from? We're getting it from financial companies that want you to save double what you're already saving. And they kind of have this drumbeat that is like it's never enough. And I think what that does in America is that it shuts people down from thinking they can even get there.
Right.
One of the five principles in the book, it's really 18 traits of happy and unhappy retirees, but it's also five secrets, if you will. One of them is just like what's a bare minimum checkpoint financially do you have to get to in America to kind of get to the point where you can, quote, be a happy retiree? And I share that number in the book, and I'll give it to you right now. It's the answer is $500,000. The answer is a liquid retirement amount that then will produce income for you at some point of at least $500,000. Now, that's still a lot of money, right? If you look at the statistics in America, the average 60-year-old has $37,000 saved. But that's taking everybody into account, right? If you mm-hmm. are if you're trying to really get to a place where you have at least enough to get into what I call the happy retiree camp, where you're just not worried about money anymore. You know you'll be able to have enough to survive till your 90s, right? That number is the first financial checkpoint we have to get to, and it's $500,000. And that is a much more palatable number, Belinda,
yes,
than what Wall Street will lead you to believe. Yeah, is $5 million better? Absolutely. But you got to get to 500. You don't need 2.6. You don't need 5 million. You need at least 500. Because if you do the math, and another chapter is about how many different income sources, here's another part of it, is that happy retirees have a greater number, statistically significant, by the way, and let's call this number 3.5, different ways they get income in retirement versus the unhappy group, which have only 2 ways, right? So think of 3.5 to 4 ways you're getting your money versus 2. Well, there's a big difference between the security of having enough different ways I'm getting paid. So I get my Social Security, then my spouse gets Social Security, then I may get a little bit of a pension somewhere, maybe get a little bit of rental income, maybe I do some part-time work or hobby income, but then I've got my investment income that's going to come from the assets that I've saved. Those are all different income streams. And happy retirees have more different, they have a higher number of different streams. The amount of income isn't dramatically higher than the unhappy group, but they have a higher level of security because it's coming from a lot of different ways. So these are all the different things we talk about in the book. Another preview is about mapping out when you get out of mortgage debt. 90, the biggest bill we pay in America is our mortgage. Arguably, healthcare is starting to creep up on that. But happy retirees are much closer to paying off their mortgage than the unhappy group. So they have a shorter mortgage. They have shorter years left on their mortgage to get paid off. And there's a lot to be said about that. So I have a whole chapter about how do you make sure you are planning for paying off the mortgage in the right timing. Because it's also a huge part of your peace of mind. It manifested in my book as happiness in the survey I did.
Mm-hmm.
But you could argue it's just financial peace of mind. It's more money goes to discretion of the things I want to do. I'm spending my money on the ways I want to spend it. And then I think one of the things that has caught on the most, or one of the if you – I've seen other people quote this now in articles without even quoting the book as if it's just out there. But I talk about something called core pursuits – in this book.
Okay.
I refer to these as hobbies on steroids. A core pursuit is a hobby on steroids. Not like a little hobby you do once in a while, but like a part of your life. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter what it is. I list in the book the top 5 happy retiree core pursuits and the bottom 5. But I don't know if that's as relevant as just having them. So the happy retiree on average has 3.6 core pursuits. The unhappy retiree has 1.9, let's say, call it core pursuits, so less than 2 and close to 4. I've read articles that cite you got to have 3.6 core pursuits. And I think we all know we need to be busy and have purpose in retirement, but it's a really interesting exercise to think about what those 3.6 core pursuits really are long before you just stop working and you say, now I'm going to get my core pursuits. Too late. it's kind of like saving money. You can't just save money and when you're starting when you're 70. Like,
right.
You can't just start playing tennis at 70, right? You got to start this stuff earlier and do it for several years to work up to the point when you're ready to retire. And that's just that side of it, the soft side. You know, the what are you doing with your money is just as important to that formula as the financial side.
It's interesting. I was talking with a really good friend of mine just two nights ago, and she's retired. She's been retired now a couple of years. And she said, my biggest advice, because she was a worker, like just like myself, work. And we enjoy work. So we work and we spend lots of hours working. But she said, man, find a hobby right now that you love and do it well, because I found myself going, what do I do with myself today? Like, I just want to go back to work. But I really didn't. And she said it took me longer than it should have to understand how to spend my day and be happy in it. So
3.6 core pursuits. More is better.
Wow, that's great. So that is awesome. So I always tell people, if you can get a hobby that makes you a little bit of money, that's even better.
Yeah, and I'm always fascinated with that too. Like I over the years I've kept a list of like, here are the 12 things that I would have never thought people make money with that my clients do. You know, right? I mean, I've got so many funny examples of people that make maybe $1,000 a month, maybe $500 a month, yep, maybe $2,000 or $3,000 a month. That, you know, if you can do that for the first 5 years of retirement and reduce what you're taking out from your investments, that's wonderful from a planning standpoint. So that's been one of the most, it's just been fun, right? You can retire sooner than you think, which is the book that I wrote that has all this data in it. It's just been so much fun. I've gotten, I don't know, 1,000 emails from folks that are appreciative of what, you know, how it made them think about their money in a different way, how it made them plan for retirement in a different way, and that you don't need all the money in the world. There's another aspect of the book called the plateau effect that talks about getting to a certain point is really important. But you can retire sooner than you think has been really a wonderful project. That's, I feel like I've truly helped people forcing them to think about this. You know, the five money secrets, the happiest retirees. I mean, that's the theme of this book. It's not just a wonky financial book. Like, the first half is all about money and happiness.
That's
second
great.
Half is how to execute on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been really helpful. So it's been a wonderful experience.
It sounds like it has. I'm going to grab that myself, because people are always looking for me to offer up really good books in different areas of their life. And I like having a nice little arsenal.
We haven't sent you one already, my goodness. I'm going to send you one today.
Okay, that's a deal.
I'm going to send you a book today.
And we do book reviews. I do it to my, we do a newsletter and we send that out to everybody. And if you send that to me, I will promise to read that and do a book review on it so that all of our listeners can see it and get a link to it and order it and all that good stuff.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's obviously on Amazon and kind of everywhere out there. I think it's even buy one, get one free on Retire Sooner Book, which it's hard to do my own. I do my own fulfillment, but it, you know, it's always hard to compete with Amazon. So
it's real hard. I know.
But RetireSoonerBook.com, I think it's, I may even be, you know, 2 for 1 on there. It's the only way to compete with Amazon. So
okay. All right. Well, in closing, any exciting things that you're working on? And then how can our listeners find you?
Yeah, just I would say communication. I'm a big believer in audio. So I've been working on my website where instead of having an option where instead of reading articles, I'm reading them to you. I mean, it takes a lot of studio time to read and make everything in an audio form. But I'm a believer in that, and I've started that project this year. So I want to communicate with our clients in a new and an even better way, and that's one of the ways we're doing it. So at wesmoss.com, where you can find me, more and more of the articles will have an audio option. So if you're like me and you're in the car and you want to read something and you can't because you're in traffic, you can hit play and you can just have it read to you as opposed to Siri reading it with all the headlines and the photo credits, like it'll happen on your phone. So
I love that. Love that. All right. Well, Wes, it has been delightful having you on the show today, and you offered really some great nuggets and some great information. And it sounds like your book is amazing. and something that I think people want. People want to retire. They want to feel good about retiring, and then they want to be happy in the retirement. So, and I think that you're right. There is, I hear that all the time. You can't even think about retiring if you don't have at least $2.5 million. So I hear that. I hear yeah. that number all of the time.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
All right. Well, thanks so much again for being
Belinda,
on today.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you having me today.
All right.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.